You hear me in my headphones. Turn it up.
I can't hear the snare drum.
All right. Welcome back to the Whiny Girl Podcast. That should be our theme song.
After a 2-week break.
I've been itching. It's been so long. I feel like we haven't been down here in ages. We had to like reset up the whole entire studio because we haven't been down here in so long.
But yeah, we turned it into a petting zoo.
Yeah, but we got the goats out and everybody's fine now. So
most of them.
Here we are. One might wander in here. But cheers.
Cheers, whiny girl.
To being back. We almost spilled that time. That's some good ass wine right there. Today's episode's going to be fun.
We're talking about making plans, right?
We're talking about vulnerability.
Vulnerability?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Vulnerability. So last episode was all about chakras, and it was our idiot's guide to chakras.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago.
And since that time, I took last week off because I was like, I was doing life. Like life started happening and it got away from me. And so I was like, you know what? I think the whiners are on understand. Like, I just got to do life right now and got to like feel it. What do you look like? You're going to laugh at me.
I was going to say, I think they're all drunk. They didn't notice.
Well, probably nobody noticed, but oh well, if you did, my apologies for not being your reprieve last Wednesday from your busy week, but here I am and here's old fashioned.
You're going to lose tens of listeners.
Tens. I'm going to lose 10. That would literally mean I would like
cut the audience
in half. It'd be done. No, I think we're past 20s now, so don't want to brag, but I'm pretty much making it big time. Let's talk about vulnerability. Vulnerability is fucking scary.
I thought you said we were going to talk about making plans.
We are going to make plans. We are going to talk about that and making plans. And vulnerability is a huge, huge part of that. Did you know that?
No, I didn't. Sneak peek to everyone into my preparation for the show.
Yeah.
5 minutes beforehand, I go, what are we going to talk about? And I hear a sentence or two and I'm like, all right, got it. Sometimes it can change between that time.
That's how we do things here. We just kind of make it up as we go along.
By the seat of the pants.
That's right. There's no other way to live. Vulnerability. Let's just say it one more time for the audience, for the people in the back. Vulnerability. How many people
can
like
you
being
use
vulnerable?
In a sentence, please.
How many people like being vulnerable? Like, no one I know likes being vulnerable.
No, it's an uncomfortable position.
Right. However, I was listening to a wonderful, wonderful podcast with, surprisingly, Richard Brand and Brené Brown, which the two of them in
Who's
a room.
Richard Brand?
Isn't that his name? Richard Brand?
The guy who was married to Katy Perry?
Yeah, what's
Russell
his?
Brand.
Russell Brand. Sorry. I always say
But Richard
I think
Brand
because...
is a powerful speaker as well.
I was thinking Richard Branson and Russell Brand, and I put the two together.
Why not?
And who's Richard Branson is a person, right?
He owns Virgin Airlines and a bunch of
All
other
right.
things.
So I'm not way far off. Like, I'm not just making up names. I'm just combining two famous people.
Yeah.
Okay, so Russell Brand and Brené Brown sat down and did a wonderful podcast on vulnerability and shame. And she brought up amazing, wonderful points. She's got like several books out and she's a really good public speaker, and most
this
women
This person
know her.
Just came across my radar in the last couple of weeks, but
yeah.
Can you explain to the whiners who
yeah.
this person is?
So Brené Brown is a researcher. She's been researching human beings and vulnerability and shame for 12 years, and she started right around September 11th, and so it has been more than 12 years? How long ago was September 11th?
19 years ago.
Wow. So 20 years she's been doing it. She started right then, and then she's been doing it ever since, and she collects data and finds patterns with people that she interviews. She's interviewed thousands of people on vulnerability and shame and what it means to them and all this jazz, and she's come across some amazing stuff, but one of her biggest points on vulnerability was multiple times she has CEOs of companies, huge companies, reach out to her to come to public speak to the company. And they'll reach out to her all the time and say like, hey, we love what you do. We love your work. A couple people here have read your book. We would really like it if you came and talked to us. And so she's like, yeah, what do you want me to talk about? And they're like, well, everything like courage and bravery and like innovation. And but if you could leave out the vulnerability and the shame part, like we don't really want that. Like we want it to be a motivational speech. And for over the course of all these years, she keeps getting these phone calls. She's like, I didn't know how to respond because I'm like, okay. Like, I can't really just leave out part of what I do and what I talk about. So she's come up with a great comeback to all these people. And what she says now is, okay, I understand you want me to leave vulnerability and shame out of my talk. And you only want me to talk about courage, bravery, and innovation. So let me ask you a question. Have you ever done anything courageous, brave, or innovative without first being vulnerable?
Yeah, you got to lay it out there, right?
You have to be vulnerable to do anything courageous, brave, or innovative.
And that's really the core message in all this.
Yes.
Right? You got to be vulnerable.
So I had an epiphany today and throughout the last week of all like these meditations I'm doing and research that I'm doing online and reading and watching. I'm like burning through YouTube videos. They're just so fascinating to me. And
I hear they have like a few videos on there now.
They do.
Like they have a library where it's reaching hundreds of videos.
I'm almost done with all the videos on there.
Done with YouTube.
But I still have a couple more to go. But yeah, there's a handful. There's a handful of really interesting ones.
Interesting.
So, yeah, you should check it out sometime.
I'll have to look at it. YouTube.com.
That's what it's called, in case nobody knows what I'm talking about. Yeah, so I had kind of an epiphany. I had an epiphany that
I can't.
The way to connect with people is to first be vulnerable. And I think for years, I've always thought, first you connect, you build trust, and then you can let yourself be vulnerable. Mm. But what happens then is that the person who you're connecting with is actually connecting with an inauthentic version of you because you're not being vulnerable.
And authenticity is really important as well, right?
Very, very important. You have to be yourself. Brené Brown also talks about the it's a really bad idea of trying to fit in to a group of people. It's a very, very, very bad approach to go into a group of people and try to fit in, which is why middle schoolers, high schoolers, you know, kids have a hard time with this because they try to make themselves a version of themselves that others will accept and like.
Sure.
And then in turn, you build resentment for yourself. You're not loving yourself. You're not being your true authentic self. So then are you really a part of that friend group? Or is this role that you're playing, that's who's a part of the friend group? And you can't be yourself and you're too scared to be.
You just blew my mind.
Right?
So let's talk for a minute about authenticity because that's hugely important.
Authenticity is big. And I think it's hard to... It's hard. It's really, really... It takes a lot of courage and vulnerability to be 100%
put yourself out there, right?
Yeah, authentic when you're meeting new people. So I think that's the issue too with making plans is you try to kind of cater to, you know, oh, well, you know, what would this person like to do? Like, I'll go do that thing with them. Like, even though I don't really like to do it, I'll try to fit into what they would want from a friend.
Mm-hmm.
So then you try to create this friendship based on like, it's not genuine. It's not authentic.
Gonna work, right?
Right. Because eventually, because it's unsustainable, right? Like you can't play a role your entire life. Eventually the true you, it has to come out and you want that for a good relationship.
Well, and we are still learning about this because in the military, not to like keep going back to that well, but you have a built-in understanding of where everyone's at in their respective timeline and ecosystem.
Yeah.
So there's never a moment where you're like, I don't get this person. Like everyone kind of knows going in where you're at. So it's automatic credibility. It's automatic authenticity. It's automatic understanding that you just don't get in day-to-day life. And we kind of still struggle with that where it's like, why doesn't everyone like kind of get where everyone else is at. And it's just not the case.
It's not the case.
It's an artificial reality.
Right in the civilian world, it's just not, that's not how the world works.
It's not the civilian world, it's the world.
It's the world.
We lived in a little bubble.
Yeah, we lived in
we just did the same thing Neverland. At the same time. For those listening, we just like made like a bubble with our hands.
We made the bubble.
I felt that energy.
Yeah, there we go. There's our bubbles. Pop the bubbles.
Pop the bubble.
Hate that bubble.
But the interesting part of that is in everyday life, in the real world, you present a version of yourself differently in different scenarios, right?
So that's what's most interesting to me, because there's being inauthentic and then there's being fake. And I don't believe the two are synonymous.
I would agree with that.
I think that there's a time and place to really, really, truly be who you are. If I'm a singer and I'm a dancer and I'm loud, I'm not going to go to a funeral and sing and dance and be loud. I'm just not going to behave that way.
Or at the rooftop pool.
Or at the rooftop
pool. Like everyone's not there to hear you sing and dance.
Right. I mean, maybe it would have broken up the
fight. Don't make me sing.
But yeah, it's the filtered, right. It's not inauthentic because you know this is a time and place. This is an event. This is for a short amount of time. I need to behave in such a way where I can still be true to myself, but I have that social filter on.
Well, and it's not being inauthentic in the sense of there's appropriate.
Right.
How you act at a funeral, how you act at a wedding, how you act at the reception.
Right.
How you act at a birthday party, how you act with your friends, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. You're not going to do the chicken dance while the bride's walking down the aisle, but you sure as shit going to tear that shit up in like 4 hours when you're drinking.
Yeah. And if you did, you'd be an asshole.
Actually, I don't know. I think that would have been awesome if somebody did that at our wedding. I'd have been pissed then, but looking back, I'm like, that would have been a memory. Chicken dance at a wedding.
But there's a version of ourselves that we present to the world, and that's okay, is my
totally
point.
Yeah.
So Paul going to the grocery store is presenting a different image than Paul talking to a bartender.
Right.
Or Paul at a business meeting.
Right.
Paul hanging out with a friend is different than Paul talking to a neighbor that you don't really know.
Right, right, right.
Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So none of those are inauthentic. I don't feel like I'm ever dishonest or inauthentic with people.
I don't think.
Certainly never fake. But it's just a different decorum that you carry into different conversations.
Yeah, I think if you wonder if you're ever being authentic, ask yourself, if I share this, will this person not like me? If I share this part of me, will someone turn me away?
And you should always be willing to do that, right?
And if that person's willing to turn you away because you share something about yourself that's honest and true, that person's not really your friend.
So the point of all this and the channel that we're like driving down is that you should just meet someone and immediately be like, I guess.
I knew it was going to come up again. I got to hand it to the blue shirt guy.
That dude was authentic AF.
It's authentic AF. He was bringing it. And you know what? We weren't his people. And that's okay. We just weren't his people.
But he like went authenticity nuclear.
I mean, sometimes you probably should filter some things. But yeah, he just didn't see it that way. So good on him.
That dude.
I commend him.
I don't even know how to categorize it.
I'm still baffled by the whole thing. But yeah, so I think that's an important thing to know too, is that you're not being fake by sharing something, by not sharing something. Mm-hmm. But if you think about what you want to share and you go, I know this person and they're not going to be okay with this, those aren't your people.
Yeah. Or just accept that you're not going to share that part of your life with them.
But then are you not being authentic?
I don't know.
That's
depends.
The question. And I don't think you are.
Do you want to share that part of your life with, Janet that you work with?
Janet. Fuck Janet. She doesn't need to know shit. Janet sucks.
So maybe you share what kind of tea you really like with Janet.
Well,
Maybe with your friend, Janelle.
Who are these people?
I'm completely making names up.
And then Jeremy and Jeffrey come into the picture. What about
Jeffrey sucks.
What about Josephine? Is she here too?
Why? would you go Jeffrey Vice Jeff? If someone was like, I insist upon being called Jeffrey, I'd be like...
Jeffrey sounds more regal, doesn't it?
Jeffrey.
It sounds like an English name.
Jeffrey.
Nah.
I don't know. I think my point in that is, though, with authenticity versus fakeness, is are you trying to become close with this person? If you really, truly are trying to develop a friendship, no one's trying to develop a friendship with Janet. Nobody likes Janet. So no one's going to tell them, like, no one's going to tell Janet that, like, hey, I have issues with my mother and, like, we don't speak. No one's going to fucking go there because you're drinking tea by, like, the water cooler in the lunchroom. Like, that's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about, forming friendships, forming bonds, forming real, true, deep relationships and connections with people. Mm-hmm. If you cannot, because of the, and not because just because you're afraid to, but if you actually know this person, I know it because I've heard them speak about people like that or people who live that lifestyle or people who do these things. I eat ass, like people who eat ass. If I've heard them talk about people who eat ass in a negative light, I don't want to share that with them. And then if I don't, though, are they truly meant for deeper connection with me if they're not fully accepting
of... That's where my head was headed.
Yeah.
Like, is that really someone that you want to share that with?
And that's the problem. So I think where this becomes dangerous, and this was my epiphany today, is this is where it becomes dangerous. And not dangerous, like burning building dangerous, but like it becomes dangerous to your heart and to your psyche.
Right.
It becomes dangerous when you try to connect with people without being authentic and without being vulnerable. And then once you feel that trust is there and you can let your guard down a little bit, mm-hmm. then you start to open up and become more vulnerable. What happens? You just flip the script on this person. This person doesn't know this version of you. They've come to accept the version of you that they met.
The topical version.
The inauthentic version. Yeah. Whatever, wherever you want to put it, whether you're lying about stuff, or
they just made a judgment based right? on.
And then you open up indicators. Afterwards, and relationships usually go south after that. Lack of vulnerability is based heavily in trauma because it's a child's way to protect the heart. So when our vulnerability has been manipulated and taken for granted and used as a way of abuse from a parent, a sibling, an adult of some sort when we were children, that's your child, like your inner child. That's their way of protecting you from that pain. The problem is what is a great safety defense mechanism when you're a kid is terrible to have as an adult.
But it's what we know.
It's what we know. So we're going off like the pre-programming, right, that we grew up on. So it's not even so much about now learning how to be vulnerable. It's relearning how to be vulnerable and unlearning how to, like, unlearning, like, not putting a guard up, not putting a wall up. So it's fucking tough, though, man. When, like, your vulnerability has been taken for granted and used against you.
Yeah.
I hear it all the time from people who are like, I was a highly sensitive kid. I cried a lot. My parents yelled at me because I cried a lot. I was too loud. I was too crazy. I had weird ideas and they always thought I was stupid because I never just wanted to do simple stuff like just sit and play with Legos and don't talk to us. But it was, oh, you've got these ideas of inventions or something. I mean, how many times have you heard anybody famous talk about this? Like either you had supportive parents who were like, you know what? Yeah, get out there and do it. Like, cool, play in the mud, figure something out. And then they like build a backhoe or something. Like they invent the backhoe because they got out there and they had supportive parents. When you don't have those guideposts that are your God, when you're growing up, your parents are your God, right? So you're looking to them for the guidance and you're looking to them to give you the okay and validate your feelings and your thoughts and your actions. And when you don't have that, you instantly start to rethink who you really are. Because kids all act off instinct. If a parent tells them they're not right when they're acting off instinct, how does that child ever know when to trust themselves?
Yeah, that registers forever.
Forever. Forever. That is a hard fucking thing to get over. Because you really do need to relearn how to trust yourself. Trust your intuition. Trust your heart. Trust your gut. It is hard work. This got deep real fast.
So how do you get around it?
Interestingly enough, I was watching another YouTube video today, and I can't remember the guy's name, but he's famous. He's all over YouTube, and I think I've shared it before, but I'll share my playlist on meditation and self-healing and self-growth and personal awareness in the bio. But
yeah, a lot of people really like that.
Yeah, it's a really good, the way I've arranged it too, it kind of goes step by step through like making you aware of certain situations, personality traits, and then how you deal with them, and then how you grow, and then how you heal yourself. So
it's like I'm so messed up. This is my recovery.
Yeah, like I need 22 YouTube videos to kind of work through this recovery. But they've all helped me, plus therapy, plus friends and family and stuff. So
are we?
Yeah, we're all broken individuals. If anybody comes to you and is ever like, I'm great. Like, I don't have any trauma from anything. I'm like,
that's Katie.
I'm instantly like, are you a psychopath?
Katie's parents loved her and like came to all her games.
Oh, Katie, you had everything so great. Everybody didn't like you in high school, but wanted to be around your family. So whatever. I was watching a great YouTube video today, though. He discussed how your thoughts and your feelings are two separate things. And if you don't realize that your feelings come and go and they aren't finite, they don't stay with you forever, they will become your thoughts. And then your thoughts will start to control your feelings.
This is the same guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's mind blowing. It's like an hour video. And I was like, okay, wait. I had to like pause it, like rewind.
Digest.
It was a lot, but it was really how to work through that. So to answer your question, it's a lot of fucking hard work, but you literally have to retrain your body to use your heart instead of your head. Because if you constantly use your head is all that's in your brain, all your thoughts are things that are based on past experience. So if you always look to, if you have trauma with relationships and you always look at new relationships with your head, you will always look to past trauma relationships and you will compare them. And then you will eventually create more traumatic relationships because it's all you know. And where does the trauma come from? Your emotions, because your head is now telling your heart, you feel this way. When that person says this thing, you feel this way. And then now your thoughts are training your heart instead of your heart training your thoughts.
So let me ask you this.
Yes.
Real world example.
Yeah.
And I just stroked the spring.
Just strumming the spring on the microphone.
You grow up in an environment where you have a very controlling parent.
Sure.
Mother, father, or whatever. When you get your first professional job, you're going to tend to gravitate towards a immediate supervisor, manager, boss, who is a similar level of controlling, right? Most times.
I would say, yeah, that's probably a given. You're going to look for a version of your parent.
Yeah. So you're going to say this feels comfortable.
Yeah, now, it could be unhealthy. Right. It's totally unhealthy, right? But it's comfortable. Not
right. Right, it's comfortable.
Yeah.
So you do that. If you find yourself in a situation with someone who's well-adjusted, you're going to find that foreign.
You're going to think it's uncomfortable. And then your emotions are going to go, this doesn't feel right.
It doesn't feel right, right?
This might be fake. This might be inauthentic because I've never experienced this before.
And it could be the best supervisor, manager, boss in the world.
Could be.
But you're finding it uncomfortable to you based on the data that you have.
Yep. Yep. I once worked for a mother-daughter team. You know where I'm talking about.
Oh, I do. Yeah.
They had screaming matches in the office. I'm talking throwing shit at each other from her office to her daughter's office. I mean, it was the most toxic environment ever. And even though I recognized it as toxic,
you were still like, this is okay.
It was comfortable. it was like, I know how to deal with this. Like, I know how to deal with this. So I just used all the tools from my toxic upbringing where parents screamed and yelled and threw shit. And I was like, I have all the tools to deal with this. This is totally fine. Like, this is manageable. And then, you know, at a certain point, it was like, oh, my God, I don't make enough money to, like, have to deal with this every day. So, like, I'll just go find a new job. But it really wasn't, like, that's scary to me. That's really terrifying that I was like, I mean, it's not that bad. Like, they just are a mother. No, like, that's there. What mother's daughters do.
I've
whatever.
Gotten into some things that were clearly unhealthy just because it seemed normal.
It seemed normal because your version of normal was different.
Well,
than
back to
healthy.
Vulnerability. Like, yeah. Let's talk authentic. I'm authentic.
You are authentic AF. You
don't have a license plate that says Pauly B. So
you are authentic as all get out. I will give you that.
Nah, pretty much right off the bat, I throw it out there as it is.
Yeah, which a lot of people are scared of. I think a lot of people
clearly
fear it.
No, I get told I'm nuts regularly.
Yeah, well, you are that,
I post a lot of stuff
too.
Online, too, that people are like, what are you thinking?
I mean, you are kind of crazy, but...
Clearly.
But you're authentic about it.
Yeah.
Own your shit. Don't be an asshole.
Do anything about it.
So you're authentic. You are just 100% you.
Well, what's the penalty for that at this point? That's my core question.
What is the penalty? So the penalty, what most people think is, well, I won't attract people.
Attract who?
The problem is you're not attracting the right people if you're not being authentic.
Yeah.
So you might have two or three really close friends as opposed to the guy down the street who has, you know, 15 or 30 amazing friendships. He loves
boys
all
are
of
buzzing.
Them. Yeah, the boys are buzzing.
Having some beers in the garage.
That's trademarked, by the way, with the guy on TikTok.
I do that too, by the way. So that's not even like a monopoly.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, I think...
No, I'm saying the beers in the garage thing.
No, I know. I know. But I'm saying the... Back to what we were talking about, it's the penalty, what people think is, I won't have that big group of friends. I won't fit in with all these people. I won't be a part of a group. And the problem there is that's not the group you want to be in.
Yeah, topical relationships.
It's a topical relationship. I've been in those friend groups. I have gotten in from an inauthentic place and then started to open up and everyone gets silent. And they are really uncomfortable with this new whiny girl. Like, who the fuck? Why is she talking about that? We don't talk about that. We don't talk about this stuff in our group. And then it's like, I thought they were my friends. And it's like, they were the other Abby. Like, not this Abby. They were friends with the other Abby that wasn't willing to share that shit. So you just threw them for a curve because you brought up shit you never, ever brought up before. So I'm not saying you got to lead with this shit. Like, hi, my name's Abby. I was raised by an abusive mother and my father was an alcoholic. How are you? Let's be friends. Like, you don't do that, but.
But maybe some person that you really connected with on the other side of the room.
There might
be like,
another person be like, hey, I appreciate your fucking authenticity. I was raised in the same environment.
I would also not recommend going all in.
Yeah.
But.
My point is like, you can't be everything to everyone, and you might just have one or two close friends that really truly understand you because you're being authentic. And even though it might look like on the surface that this person that you see that has, you know, 30, 40 friends, they all do stuff together, they go on vacations and they hang out all the time, what kind of relationship do they have? Like, no one really knows that, right? Do they talk about intimate things, or do they just like, look at that game. Let's talk about the game. Like, all right, whoa, that football player was really good. Or let's talk about the weather or something.
We're kind of foreigners to the vacation concept. But going on vacation, with someone, what does that mean? What's going on there?
I think it's like couples vacation. I see it happening all the time. I think people just like go to the same spot and then like the girls will do a girls' day and the guys will hang out and then you just kind of go to dinner together and go to the casino. Like, let's say it was Vegas, like you would go out and see a show together, but then like you'd probably do like separate things as a couple. Or maybe these are people who hate their spouse and that's why they go on couples vacays, because they actually don't want to spend time with their spouse.
Could be.
I don't know.
Either way makes sense. Just curious.
Yeah, I think it'd be fun, but I also know, like, you and I have not done, like...
A vacation?
A week-long vacation since our honeymoon in 2004.
Correct.
So I think I'd rather do that first than go on a couple's vacation with somebody. Like, it would be hard to, like, get the alone time. But,
I don't know. Yeah, be authentic. Meet the right people and...
maybe it would be fun. Get in there. I don't know. Like, a big group to do stuff with and then... Part so ways
to
the
listening
the
audience. Anyone who eats ass, apply.
Those were our vacation buddies right there. Why didn't we ask them?
They were authentic.
They were authentic. They left before we could ask.
Go on vacation with us.
wait, you eat ass? Come on vacation.
I don't want to see
us.
The ass eating, but
I know it's happening. It's fine, but I just don't want to see it. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. So, okay. So back to your original point, making plans with people. Making plans.
No, bringing it full circle.
I'm bringing it back. So making plans with people is difficult because it does take courage to ask somebody you've never met, like out on a date, out to coffee. Hey, you seem like a mom that I could really get along with. Let's hang out sometime. It takes courage and bravery because one, as a woman, there's a lot of mean bitches out there. So it is really difficult to make friends as a mom. And I know this resonates with pretty much all my listeners because I've seen posts about it. I've seen people comment about it. I've heard people say things about it. It's freaking difficult.
Well, most people hang out with the people they know from their childhood, whether it was school or college or whatever.
Yeah. Because we live in a small town. Right? So people generally stay within their circle that they made when they were like 18, 19, in their 20s, like college circle, high school.
In a lot of cases, what we've experienced moving around all the time, they're like, I don't even like them, but like I know them.
I know them.
I hung out with them when I was 17. So like,
and I know
still
their parents and we have kids the same age and like it just kind of works out.
So that's the connection.
That's the connection. And then maybe it's a topical connection at that too, right? Like maybe there's like, yeah, they know stuff about me from my childhood, but like we don't really talk about philosophical things. We don't talk about family drama. We don't talk about trauma, past pain, shame, vulnerability. We don't talk about that. I like to talk about that stuff. It makes people so uncomfortable because you start bringing that up. Like Brene Brown says, she rides in first class every now and then and she'll sit next to a businessman. And he'll be like, oh, okay, so what do you do? And she just looks him dead in the eye. And she's like, I study vulnerability and shame. And the guy's immediate response is like putting his earbuds in. He's like, I'm just going to go play Angry Birds. It was great meeting you. Have a great flight. Because like nobody wants to talk about that shit.
Oh,
it's too, I don't know, it's too deep for some people. Because it brings up that pain and hurt. So.
And people don't like facing their pain, right?
I would say no.
Why not?
I think the hardest, well, so someone I know in particular, I think for them, this is a great example. When pain gets pushed down, what is the quote I wrote down earlier? It was like, pain that is not, pain that is not, what's the word? Transitioned or...
Processed
through will always be transmitted.
Oh.
Hurt people.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So if you aren't processing through your pain, you will become an angry individual. You will become a person who inflicts pain on other people because then you know how to deal with that person because you yourself are in pain.
Yeah.
So I think that's the lazy approach, but I think that's what people like to do because it's just easier that way. It's easier for me to stuff it all down and pretend it never happened.
Right.
And then I'll just surround myself with other people who do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm comfortable. I'm not saying I'm healthy. I'm not saying this isn't a toxic relationship, but it's comfortable for me because I know how to deal with it. And I think that is the first thing. And I think secondly, healing from pain is a really hard thing for people to do because it's not something that happens overnight. There's a huge in-between part. I'm still in the in-between from all of my past trauma and past like hardwiring, you know. True. And that in-between stage is a shitty ass place to be because you know you want to be better and you know you want to get better and you know you want to feel better, But you can't just flip a switch. You can't ever just get to the point of, okay, you know what? Today I'm going to wake up happy and I'm going to be fine. And that shit from my past, it's in my past. I'm never going to let it affect me again.
So what are some tools that people can use to overcome these things?
I mean, first of all, meditation. However you meditate, if you pray, if you do chakra stuff, spiritual healing, guided meditation, soft music and sit alone in a room, whatever.
But the bottom line there and the common thread is think about it.
Like sit and think be about aware.
It, reflect on it.
I think the common thread there is to sit in self-awareness.
Yeah, be aware.
And be aware of what is happening right now.
So recognition.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I think admitting it, first of all, and not just saying, well, they tried their best. You know, that some people don't try their best. I get it. A lot of parents just did the best they could with what they had. But a lot of parents didn't try their best. They just aimlessly kind of went through life and they brought these kids into the world and they kind of just let them exist around them.
Sure. We probably did that in some ways.
Oh, I'm sure for years I did that because I didn't know any different because that's how I was raised, right? Like I didn't know that you did other than that. Like you just, like you're in my world, you're another human, yes. And I think that was the difference for me is like, you're another human, you're my responsibility, but you're not my property. And I think that's a fine line too, is when parents define their children as their property and try to raise them to be exactly like them, that is terrible. But when you view another when you view a child as simply another human being on the planet that just happens to be your responsibility for 18 years, then you can detach from that person and truly treat them as you would treat another human being. And now it's just simply your job to guide them that first 18 years or 25 nowadays, but and get them to a place where they can be a healthy, self-aware, contributing member of society. But until you realize that, you won't start to adapt to like those new habits or those new ways of thinking. So I think the first step, yes, is awareness. Awareness that somebody hurt you. Awareness that whether or not they had the best intentions or not, that doesn't mean that you weren't hurt by it. And you need to be accepting of your awareness. I posted something on the Whiny Girl earlier today, and it said, the difference between resiliency and healing is acceptance.
So you just got to be okay with, like, what's going on,
yes.
Who you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to be aware and accepting of, like, this is what happened to me. And it wasn't okay, but I'm going to be okay.
Yeah.
Because of it. So I think that's step one. And then step two is you really get in touch with your emotions and you really start feeling your feelings and not convince yourself with your thoughts because of the hardwiring you got or the pre-programming you got as a child.
Just kind of think through them.
That your thoughts or that your emotions are bad or invalidated or wrong.
Right.
Your emotions are your emotions. They're not bad, wrong, indifferent, whatever. They're just that. So I think that's another step. And then, yeah, I don't know past that. I'm still in the in-between, so I don't have it all figured out. Trust me, if I had the answers,
sounds
I would
to me.
Totally share them. But
hopefully that's enlightening to some people.
I hope so. It has been a journey for me, and I'm nowhere near the end. I know that, like, you know, I started therapy a year ago. I've been in therapy off and on my whole life, but I started a really important therapy last year around this time. And I had always said from the moment I met her, it was a emotional awakening in September. And now I'm having like my spiritual awakening, which is crazy because I thought they kind of all were the same. And I think they're intertwined and, you know, it's a Venn diagram. They all overlap.
Sure.
But my therapist in September of last year held the missing puzzle piece to the puzzle I'd been trying to put together for years. And she showed me the box, the picture on the box, and went, this is what it's supposed to look like. And I went, oh my God, I finally got it. So I've been working on all those tools and resources, and I've been working with them to try to, you know, get to a better place and to this picture that I knew existed. And then a couple months ago, I got to a new place where I was like, oh shit, like everything was working up to this point. And now I feel like there's somewhere else that I need to be.
It's a bigger puzzle.
It's a bigger puzzle. Yeah. So now I'm on to puzzle two. A lot more pieces, But I have all the tools and resources to put it together now. And I'm learning more and I'm gaining more and I'm trying to get to the next level. So
growth, right?
Yeah, man. Growth is hard. In between is hard. It's a hard place to be.
Hard knock life.
It's a hard knock life. But making plans with people is fucking difficult. Because you got to be courageous and you got to be vulnerable.
Well, and we're consumed, right? At a micro level.
Well, let's.
You're talking macro, but yeah. On a micro level, people got.
Oh, they got soccer and baseball and kids stuff and jobs.
Social media stuff flying in.
Yeah, and family stuff.
We probably all need to like take a step back. Even during the quarantine, like I don't think someone gets let up.
Yeah.
Maybe it even got worse in some ways.
Yeah, I think, we were having that conversation too. Of like, well, now all the meetings that we used to go to in person, now they just turned into Zoom calls. And now they're longer because everybody is like, oh, we got all the time in the world. Let's just spend 3 hours on a Zoom call with each other. And it's like, now it's even worse.
Dear God.
Than before. But that kind of died off because I think people kind of woke up and they were like, I can't do this anymore. Like, it's unsustainable.
Yeah, the Zoom calls fell off
a
ways back.
Yeah. So but that's a good thing. And
it's
a
point in time. It's a transition. We're all learning.
I think hopefully if there's one takeaway from all of this COVID stuff and all of this quarantine stuff, that people will really truly start to reflect on what matters the most. And I don't even, and what matters the most is like, that's perspective for everybody in their own way.
Mm-hmm.
But human connection is important. Real human connection. And in order to do that, you got to be vulnerable. And it's tough.
Amen. I'll cheers to that. Cheers.
So get out there. Get your ass vulnerable. Because that's the only way you're going to connect with people.
What are you drinking tonight?
I'm drinking Apothic Rosé. I think I've drank this before on the show, but I really like this wine. It's from California.
Cool label.
2018. It is a really pretty label. There it is on the YouTube. I'm such a boomer. I call it the YouTube.
The YouTube.
Like, I'm going to go down to the Ford's dealership. my Grammy used
to go to the Aldi.
Got to go up to Ford's. Let's see. This one says, peer into the secret garden beyond the veiled gate. Among pale petals lies a refreshing blend. This rosé blends layers of strawberry, watermelon with a hint of raspberry for a refreshing wine that is light in color yet dark in nature. Apothic. This one is... Oh, this one's that weird one. It's on the side. Hold on. Let me not dump out the bottle. 13%. Not bad. I drank one the other night that was 14.1, and I got really sick, and I couldn't figure out why. And then I looked at the bottle the next morning, and I was like, oh, that's probably why.
This whole podcast has been enlightening to me because I would have never thought that.
Yeah, I have a friend who's like, what difference does 1% make? And I was like, you wouldn't believe it.
Would not have thought.
Yeah, you can drink a bottle of 12.5%, and it's like, okay. You start drinking a bottle of 14.5%, that you will be sick. Unless you're an alcoholic. In that case, you are sick already.
White girls drink.
It shouldn't take you wine.
Red wine like it's Gatorade.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fair enough.
No, but I'm down with some rosé. So.
Well, I'm having a scotch that I've covered on a previous show.
Oh, yeah?
Same one. So.
What one is it?
We won't belabor the point.
We'll just say what it is if it's that good and you're drinking it again.
Isla Storm from Trader Joe's.
Ooh, Trader Joe's.
I've had, for the winers out there, I've had a case of some
It's the weirdest name for like...
But it's so appropriate.
An inflection.
Which is like gastroenterological reflux disease
Something like that.
Heartburn, basically.
Yeah, it's heartburn. It's acid reflux.
Yeah, it's probably representative of a bigger problem. And we're going to figure it out, but I'm drinking in moderation.
Yeah.
And eating like yogurt and berries, and I'm probably going to lose a bunch of weight.
It's so sad. Your whole Italian diet is like on the no-no list.
Yeah, for anyone who's like a GERD awareness
GERD awareness. Can we make t-shirts? GERD awareness.
Yeah. I had no idea. I didn't know this was a thing, but the Italian diet might as well be like... Your death sentence. Tomatoes, onions, garlic.
Pretty much everything you've been cooking. And you just got into cooking like within the last year and you've been making all these amazing meals and now like you can't make any of them.
Well, yeah, now it's like make soup.
We did have some good goat cheese and bean tacos the other day. Those were pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty boring, but pretty good.
You got to be careful. Dairy is like your enemy.
Yeah. There's certain cheeses you can have, though, right?
Some. Yeah. Some are better
like
than
the
others.
Hard cheese is okay, but the
And the
softer.
Weird thing is it varies by person. Like something that really triggers one person can not be a factor for another.
Right,
so
right.
We're figuring that out.
Well, I think that you're going to be fine because the VA can see you in February of 2021. And so
yeah.
By then, you'll be okay.
Hashtag veterans rights. The VA has not risen to this occasion. I get that Corona's going on and everything, but they're basically like, yeah, well...
We'll get around to it.
Yeah. Good thing I'm not dying.
And that's when your scope is. It's not quite as long as February, but...
Yeah, I'm going to get a big snake down my throat. That's karma for shoving things down your throat all these years. I'm just being authentic and vulnerable.
Be authentic and vulnerable. It is karma. Yeah, I won't say where else you should have stuff shoved then. Anywho.
Holla.
So as we become more vulnerable and become more authentic, reach out if you want to party. We don't eat ass, but...
I eat ass.
But we'll go on vacation with you. We'll go somewhere. That'll be fun. We'll go up to Weston. It's apparently a swingers thing. I did get clarification that that may, in fact, be a swingers destination point.
Okay. You heard...
I heard from Purd. I heard that that may be...
That's a spot, huh?
The spot. So because it's private.
Right.
Yeah, because it's private and it's like a local destination without
private.
Going too far. Well, because you have bed and breakfast. So it's not like a huge hotel and a huge tourist place. So it's more intimate.
It's a mood, huh?
It's a mood. It's a vibe. It's a vibe.
Well, look at that.
So when are we going back? Now that I have this new knowledge.
Well, I have to make the shirt. This is, I provide
the
ass.
I provide the ass, and then we'll go back.
And you have one that says, I drink ass.
Oh, I gagged last time you said that. So disgusting. So gross.
And then we'll go back.
All right.
What's up, Weston? You ready?
You ready for this shit? I don't think they're ready for it.
Is Branson a spot, too, for the same reason?
You know, I don't know. Branson is very tricky because you've got, like, the landing in Branson.
Big like, family spot.
That's,
though,
like,
right?
Rich
Weston's
people.
Weston's not really, like, a family spot.
Weston's not a family spot. How many kids did you see there?
Not many.
I don't think I saw one child. I saw like 21-year-olds who were like, we live here. So we're just like hanging out because we live
here. That's a really good point. We should go back to Weston. Always.
Never saw a child. I never saw one child there. It's a great spot.
Is there a childless, like a zone?
I don't know. I think Weston.
Wow.
I mean,
I didn't even think about it.
Did you know they're doing a... speaking of Richard Branson way earlier in the pod, did you know he'd started a Virgin cruise line that's adults only?
Yeah.
That was a while ago. It's like four or 5 years ago, but
I heard that.
I was intrigued. I was like, ooh, that might be good.
We went to Hedonism, the resort.
We did. We did.
It's everyone's intrigued now. For those still listening, they're like, what's up with that? We did. We'll save that for another episode.
In Jamaica was interesting.
We have
many stories about that. That'll be the next pod. We'll talk about our honeymoon and how interesting.
Some stuff going on there.
Some spicy stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about it next time.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thanks for tuning in. Check us out on Instagram. Check us out on YouTube if you're just listening. And if you're watching, thank you. Like and subscribe. And then check out thewhinygirl.com for all of our links for everything. And our merch store. I got to get some more t-shirts up there. Provide ass. I eat ass.
So many designs. I still maintain. I don't care if you like or follow or subscribe to anything.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I prefer you didn't.
Yeah. Please don't. We don't want you.
That's my authentic self.
Thanks.
Fuck off.
So if you could just not listen to him, that would be great. So that wraps up another episode. Another cheers with your scotch and my rosé, and we will talk to you guys next week.
Bye, Wayne.
Cheers, bitches. Booyah.